Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great week or weekend, wherever and however you may be listening to this podcast across our great country or our great land. My name is Will Highland. It is December 11th, 2023. Hard to believe it, but we are here. So much has happened since I last talked to everybody. We did our hockey show with Diesel, Odd Man Rush. That came out Wednesday. I encourage you all to go listen to that for all your latest NHL news and notes. That was a lot of fun getting on board with Kyle again and doing that on Wednesday. But as for today, so much has gone on, especially in the baseball hot stove since we last spoke. And also just in the football realm. I mean, I don't even think I've had a chance to talk about some of the fallout from the FSU decision. I think that was the prime decision, or excuse me, the prime topic that I talked about on the last show. And so much has happened in college football since, and even in the NFL too. Just crazy stuff happening all around football. Basketball, we'll get to in a second too. The Lakers will get their participation trophy for winning the in-season tournament. Nobody cares. So we'll talk about that too. And then we'll also talk a little bit about the Army-Navy game in football as well that happened yesterday. But first things first, the baseball hot stove has exploded. It is now cranked past high, past the furthest you can go on the dial, and we are now underway. I'm going to try not to talk too much about the Red Sox because there's two moves that were made this past week that were big. One was Juan Soto being dealt from San Diego to the Yankees for, you know, some prospects and whatnot, and Juan Soto probably, if I had to guess, is going to sign long-term in New York. He's a top five player in baseball. And then yesterday, Shohei Ohtani signs with the Los Angeles Dodgers for 7 years, 10 years, $700 million. Now, back in March, I had told Michael that 10 years, $600 million is what I thought he would get. Turns out it's going to be 10 years, $700 million. And I know $100 million sounds like a lot, but when you divide it over 10 years, it's only $10 million. I was only off $10 million a year, which for a player like Shohei Ohtani, it's still a lot of money, but I don't think my prediction was that far off. I thought the Red Sox should go for it. But that was in March. That was before the injury. And a lot of people are talking a lot about the injury, talking a lot about the overpayment, all this. My thing is, I'm not a sports fan. I'm not a sports fan because I care about what my team does with their money. I'm a sports fan because I care about what my team does to win. And like, especially from a Red Sox perspective in baseball, we already have a high payroll. We already have probably one of the highest ticket prices and concession prices in the country of all 30 teams. Like 85 to 90% of the games are on NESN, which you have to pay for. It's not over the air anymore. Not with satellite TV. You have to either have a cable or pay for the subscription. So it costs a lot to be a Red Sox fan already. So why do I care what John Henry does if he gives Shohei Ohtani $700 million? If I'm a Los Angeles Dodger fan, I guarantee I'm not waking up saying, oh my gosh, the Dodgers owners are paying too much money for Shohei Ohtani. Because at the end of the day, like, it's not my money. Right? It isn't. And it's not like the ticket prices are ever going to come down. Right? Like, it's not like the Dodgers are going to cut ticket prices or raise them due to Shohei Ohtani one way or the other. Like, Shohei Ohtani coming to the Dodgers is naturally just going to increase demand in the tickets anyway. It's not like the Dodgers are going to have to artificially maneuver that in any way. I think you understand what I'm saying. So this whole idea about like, well, the Dodgers are spending so much money on Shohei that they're going to have to jack up ticket price. No, they're going to do that no matter what. This is how it works. And he's going to pay dividends for them because people are going to go simply because of Shohei Ohtani. So to me, like, I don't care about the money. I really don't. Like, it's not my money. The money I'm already paying for the team is going to stay there whether or not Shohei Ohtani's on the Red Sox or the Dodgers or the Angels or wherever. The one fan base I do kind of want to point at a little bit with and laugh, and, you know, my first job in sports media was with a bunch of Blue Jays fans, so I have a soft spot in my heart for these guys. But holy moly, did they get their hopes up for nothing. You know what that reminds me of, guys? It reminds me of, you know, a high school kid who is going to go try and be the prom king or the prom queen, and then they come in second place, and it's not just second place by a hair, it's second place by a lot. And so everyone says, well, you almost won. Or it's the people, like, and I'll point to this as well. As a kid at my elementary school, we did what's called the speaking contest, right? You get up there, you recite a poem or a speech or whatever, and there's first, second, third place, and then there's honorable mention. All right, my sister won first place one of her years. She was gifted at that. I didn't become a gifted public speaker per se until I was in college and I took a class on it. But it came naturally to her, and she won. But then when it got time for me to do it, I was the honorable mention, right? Want to know what sucks more than third place or second place? The honorable mention, right? And that's pretty much what the Toronto Blue Jays are, right? Like, they're the honorable mention, the almost got Shohei Ohtani fan base. And they really fell for it. I mean, there were so many reports about his plane and the sushi restaurant and all this other stuff, and or that he liked Rogers Center because it reminded him of the Tokyo Dome. All of these things, all this Twitter buzz. This is, again, guys, why I never buy into Twitter buzz about sports. I never do. I've said this. I do not celebrate the acquisition of a player until the man is literally on the field practicing, or until the jersey is literally being hung up in front of him or her in front of the podium. And it's for reasons like the Blue Jays, who thought they were going to get Shohei, and then the rug was literally pulled out from them at the end. And he wasn't ever going to go there. I'm sorry. I just have to point that out, too. Shohei signs a $700 million deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers, one of the premier brands in baseball. As much as I may have bought into it for a few minutes on Thursday, I thought as early as Tuesday that he was going to be a Dodger. And, you know, if you don't believe me, I'll show you the texts between me and my friends. I just didn't see that Toronto was a place that he was going to go. A Japanese-born player, right? West Coast is a lot closer to fly, and it's not like he has to worry about paying for a flight. With his $700 million contract, plus all he makes in endorsements and with the Angels. But it makes a difference if you cut the flight time by 6 hours. Also, I mean, Los Angeles, 12 months out of the year, or 10 months out of the year, however long he wants to live there, versus Toronto. Now, I've never been to LA, but I've been to Toronto. Toronto's a fine city. It's not a superstar city. Not even Drake lives there long, you know, all year long, and he's probably the most famous person to come from Toronto. It's not a city. No offense to our friends north of the border, it's their New York City in Canada, but it's not a place that a superstar like Shohei Ohtani was going to spend 10 years. And the Blue Jays are a strong team. They've been way more competitive than the Red Sox recently. They have a good young core: Vlad Guerrero, Bichette, Biggio. All those guys, they're not a team that was going to land Shohei Ohtani. It's easy for me to say that after the fact, but just I can show you the proof. I never thought he was going to be a Blue Jay. So from this whole instance, I've learned three lessons from the Shohei Ohtani / Juan Soto experience over the last 5 days. Number one, as I pointed out, the Yankees do what they need to do to win. I've said this before. The old Red Sox would have overreacted and immediately went out and got a player the next day. Because that's what they used to do when the Yankees went for a player. And they didn't get one. I think it was maybe the 04 leading into 04 when they didn't get A-Rod, the Red Sox went out and got Curt Schilling immediately because he was like the next best player available. You know, there's been times where they've missed out on guys and immediately gone out and compensated. They don't do that anymore. So the one lesson I've learned, and I've said this before on other shows, is the Yankees will do what it takes to get the player. We've seen that at deadline after deadline. We've seen that offseason after offseason. Second lesson I've talked about. Not my money. I don't care. Just get the best team on the field. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not the one writing the check. Just get a good team on the field. That's what I care about, number one, as a fan. And the third thing is, the third lesson, superstars go where superstars want to go. Right? Juan Soto, Washington, San Diego, pretty good baseball markets. Nothing's as good as New York. You know, and maybe Boston, maybe LA, San Francisco, some of those other teams. And I think I said Shohei a month ago was probably going to end up at a big market team. That's what happens. All right. They go where you win, right? You go to the big market. So those are my three lessons. The Yankees or big markets goes after big players. The players go after big markets, and it's not my money, so why do I care? If that's the lesson you want to take from this week, it's that. And that's my 2 cents on the baseball offseason. All right, as far as the other big stories that are going on in sports these days, college football will still be a massive storyline for the next month or so leading into the bowls. And it's been a lot of fallout about FSU. And I think I want to take this moment to clarify a few things. Because I've had some people ask me. FSU, in a perfect world of college football, would have made the playoff. And I said, it's really not their job to pick the teams with the four best records. Because if that were the case, then like Liberty would have made the playoff. And I know everyone yells about the Power Five and about how the Florida State was, you know, a conference champion in the Power Five looking to, you know, improve their schedule, all this stuff. All I'm saying is Florida State getting left out. I know it's been a week, so we've probably all digested it. It's one of those moments where you just look back at it and you say, what is sports? All right. Is sports a meritocracy or is sports a political, you know, machinistic, Machiavellian, whatever. I don't even know if those are words I'm using right now. What is sports at this moment in time? And sports at this moment in time isn't really meritocratic, whatever word that is. It's not a meritocracy at the moment, especially college football. It isn't. It's a have and have not, what have you done for me lately kind of sport. And the committee did what the committee has always done, which is look out for the interest of college football as a business. So I'm not sure why everyone's upset that they did the same thing. Their job is to pick the four best teams with the best resumes that are going to create the best playoff for the sport. That is their job. People say they're supposed to give to the four most deserving teams. Well, that doesn't work when there's 9 or 10 deserving teams because it's so subjective. It is a subjective practice. Things like resume and, you know, strength of schedule, they might sound metrical, but they really are subjective things. Like, we try to put metrics on them, like strength of schedule or, you know, versus Power Five, versus non-Power Five, versus in-conference, out-of-conference. We try and do all these things, but it's an inherently subjective thing. So sports is less meritocratic and more political, meaning that it's really about interactions with between entities rather than it is about one sole entity and the way that it has succeeded or failed. In layman's terms, it's basically like, what's more important to the committee? That Florida State is undefeated, or that Alabama just pulled off an amazing win over a team that hadn't lost in 2 years? Like, answer that question for me. We all know, based on the results of a week ago, what the answer to that question is. What's more important to them? The fact that we even considered the Power Five is a subjective thing in and of its own. That's what drives me up a wall. Because the same people that say, like, well, they're a Power Five undefeated conference champion. Great. What does the Power Five mean? The Power Five is the Pac-12 for now, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC. That in and of itself is a subjective way of looking at college football, that you consider those five conferences to be more powerful than another. So before we even arrived on the blowhards that are crying about Florida State, and look, I get it. I've said, take nothing away from them. They had a phenomenal season, but let's just call it what it is. You're automatically discounting a team like Liberty or Tulane. I don't think Tulane went undefeated, but you get my drift. They're a conference champion from a non-Power Five entity, Boise State. All these other teams have been left out over the years because they're not Power Five conferences. That's a subjective thing too. So should Florida State make it in over Liberty because they're a Power Five conference? That sounds pretty subjective to me. What makes those conferences bigger? Oh, it's the political things. It's that they have more money and more resources and ability to get into TV slots. That's what makes an ability to recruit with NIL now and other things. That's what makes those colleges Power Five. So when you complain about big brands like Alabama or Michigan or Ohio State or whomever, in this case Alabama, getting special treatment, I understand that. I believe in the meritocracy. But let's not pretend that Florida State isn't benefiting from, wouldn't have benefited from the meritocracy over other undefeated conference champs because they're in the Power Five. You know what I mean by that? They are, you can make the meritocracy argument toward Florida State and be like, look, they were undefeated, unblemished record. And they're a Power Five school. The minute you say Power Five school, it's no longer an objective thing because there are plenty of other Division One FBS schools that were undefeated. And so what makes Florida State different is automatically a subjective thing. So we're already heading into a subjective criteria organization throughout this all, which is why I think the decision they ultimately came to was the teams with the best resumes. Right? Alabama's resume. One loss all year to a Texas team. That Texas team played a pretty tough schedule against a lot of ranked opponents. Texas also won their conference. Alabama wins their conference by beating an undefeated Georgia team for 2 years. Serves them their first loss. Those are two good resumes. And then, of course, you have Washington, who was an undefeated conference champ, who beat Oregon twice to do so, beat Utah, beat Colorado, beat other good teams out there. And then obviously Michigan. People talk about Michigan's strength of schedule. Well, they beat Ohio State three straight years, and they beat Penn State on the road when it mattered. So my whole point is this whole thing is subjective. So the second you bring up Power Five, that's a subjective thing. And so did Florida State get screwed? Of course they did. But let's not pretend that Alabama and Texas didn't deserve to be there because they weren't undefeated. That's ridiculous. In Maine, we use something called heel points in our high school sports. It's kind of stupid and nobody really understands what it means. But by and large, it gets the job done. Because the teams that make the playoffs in heel points usually are the teams that deserve to make the playoffs. For example, there have been teams, my senior year, my team, we were ranked third in baseball out of 13 And the first three got a bye, meaning that the remaining 10 played each other, five winners emerged, and then you seeded 1-8. We are the third team. We got a bye, all right? We ended up playing, I think, the 6th overall seed because they ended up playing the they ended up playing like the 11th ranked team or something like that, and they won. That 6th seed team went on to beat us. They went on to beat the number 2, and they went on to beat somebody else on the other side of the bracket to go to the state finals. They were the number 6 team. The only reason they were ranked lower than us is because they had, we had beaten them once. We each beaten each other once, but we had had wins against other teams. But the only reason they slid up to 6 is because there were teams below them in other conferences in the region that had less of an impressive schedule, and therefore the heel points allowed them to be higher seed. That way, they still got to play a home game in the preliminary round as a 6 versus the 11. But then they had to go on, and they were a battle-tested team because they played in a battle-tested conference, and their heel points allowed them to be a competitive team that got hot at the right time. And so my point is nobody really understood what heel points meant, but it was an objective thing. It was your win was worth, you were all worth the same at the beginning of the season. But as you kept winning, your value got higher. And that therefore, if a team beat you, their value got higher. And as you kept winning and they kept winning, both teams' value started to increase. Something like that could happen in college football where not everyone plays in the same conference. Because we didn't play all, I think there were 18 teams and 13 made the playoffs. We didn't play all 17 other teams. We might have played 9 or 10. And the remaining ones were in their own conference. But when it came to the regional playoffs, what mattered is that we were all in the same boat, right? Like, your heel points got sorted, and that's how you were sorted. There was no subjective thing about it. It was your tournament index was X, Y, or Z, and that's how you were labeled. And the reason why the number 6 seed was able to be as high as they were was because they had beaten us in the early part of the season. We had kept winning. They had kept winning. And then that allowed them to be ranked higher than some teams in a weaker conference that didn't beat anybody good because they might have been 11-5 and this team might have been 9-7, but this team had beaten the 3 overall seed at one point. And so that added into their strength of schedule. And clearly they were the better team because they ended up beating us. And so some people might say, well, if they were the better team, they should have been ranked higher than you at 3. But the reason why heel points works is because we had beaten other teams that they might not have beaten and vice versa. So at the end of the day, it all came out in the wash, right? And the best teams ended up winning. You give the lower teams a chance when you rank, when you actually put a mathematical formula in and not just blurt out strength of schedule like it's, you know, something that everybody understands. Nobody understands heel points, but it works, right? Strength of schedule, okay, it might work in the NFL, when there's 32 teams in 8 divisions that play one another on a rotating basis. It doesn't really work in FBS college football where schedules are made years in advance and nobody really, nobody really has skin in the game when it comes to all things like guarantees and whatnot. And, you know, you can make wins out of thin air and all these things that happen in a corrupt system. So anyway, I think I'm belaboring the point, but I just wanted to clarify that it don't be fooled by the meritocracy argument when it comes to Florida State, because it is just as subjective to rank Florida State's undefeated season get over somebody like Liberty just because they're in a Power 5 conference. You've already played the game a different way, right? Because if the Power 5 was all that mattered, then it should be its own college football entity. Right. I guess that's my overall point in less words. All right, speaking of college football, real quick, Army-Navy game yesterday, great. It was at Gillette Stadium. I didn't get a chance to watch it live. Came down to a fourth down stop at the end zone. Army pulled it out 17-9. Navy was driving with a chance to tie the game with a two-point conversion, possibly. If they were to get that touchdown, they were stopped short. It was epic. The crowd was awesome. I love the Army-Navy game. I talk about it every year. It's something that I wish more people appreciated as the college football event that it is. In my opinion, it's right up there with the New Year's Six Bowl games in terms of the most entertaining college football event of the year. All right. Speaking of entertaining events of the year, or in this case, the lack thereof, the NBA all-season, in-season tournament, I call it all-season tournament. I also sometimes call it the play-in tournament, which is not what it is at all. It concluded, and the Lakers win. Congratulations. Does anybody care? No. And before there are any Celtics bias questions, I was hyped into it. Like I mentioned on a few shows ago, I was into it. I wanted the Celtics to win. And then like they lost to Indiana and I didn't care at all. I didn't care. Maybe it's because I'm so used to the Celtics losing playoff series the last few years that I didn't really find this to be anything that I hadn't already seen. But like LeBron and the Lakers win. Okay. Am I supposed to pretend that I care? They call it the NBA Cup, apparently. That was the first time I heard about that. I saw the article this morning on ESPN. They called it the NBA Cup. To me, if they'd called it the NBA Cup the whole time, that leaves a little bit of more interest in it. Because the in-season tournament sounds stupid. If you call it NBA Cup, suddenly that makes me a little bit more intrigued. So anyway, I thought I just wanted to revisit that real quick and just ask, did anybody know that the Lakers won? Did anybody care? And the last thing I'll say about this is it's finally the first thing that LeBron James has done of value, apparently, that Michael Jordan never did, which is win the NBA in-season tournament. All right, before I close up shop, I'd be remiss if I didn't revisit the Bailey Zappi Mac Jones drama. All right, so I haven't talked about this yet. Patriots win on Thursday night in Pittsburgh, 21-18. A couple thoughts on the game. Number one, I only watched the first half. I was tired. I was just tired. It's a busy time of year for me at work. Number two, Zappi looked good. I mean, I've always said that he sucks. You know, I gave him a chance last year, but then I thought people got way too into it. And then he was like cut in training camp and he looked like, you know, trash against some of the teams that he got in with this year. And I just don't see him as a long-term NFL quarterback. And I think a lot of the Zappi fever, so to speak, comes from a hatred of Mac Jones. And if you guys know me, yes, I've left the Mac Jones Island, but I still will point it out that a lot of the reasons why Zappi is viewed favorably is because he's the alternative to Mac Jones and people hate Mac Jones. Without talking about another choice that we might have in 11 months or so, it's a pretty similar bet. You have two choices. You don't like either one of them. But so the one that's less bad is the one that you're going to pretend to like. That's sort of what the Zappi fever was to me. So that's my second thought about the game. My third thought about the game is he played pretty well. Like he did. Like the three touchdowns in the first half, that was apparently something that hadn't happened since Brady left, I thought, is what I heard or read. Good stuff. I thought they looked good. I thought that throw to Hunter Henry in the end zone was great. I thought he had a couple good throws. There was one to Thornton down the sideline that I liked as well. Here's the problem, though. I went to bed, and it was 21-10, and I thought, all right, if the Pats win this game, it's probably going to end up being like 34-20. No, it was 21-18. They didn't score a point in the second half. So they had a handful of good drives in the first half, one of which I thought came from a Trubisky interception, if I'm not mistaken. And they looked okay, but they're not world beaters. So, and nobody wants them to be. So, am I supposed to feel better about Bailey Zappi going forward because he had a good half? I mean, I think Mac Jones has had a couple good halves. I think Brian Hoyer had a good half against the Chiefs a couple years ago when we lost out there in a regular season. It's like a backup quarterback has his first good half of the season in week 13 or whatever it is. Am I surprised? No, I mean, he looked decent against the Browns and Lions last year. But, like, is this the real Bailey's? I mean, he was acting like he won the Super Bowl. And look, I wanted the Patriots to win. This is my fourth point. I know a lot of people were like, oh, tank, tank, tank. Sorry, I just want to make sure I don't run out of time here. The fan base was like, tank, 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 tank. Well, they won, and it still didn't impact their draft position. And I don't even know if Chicago's going to take a quarterback. And if they do, and it's Caleb Williams, so what? You have Drake May and Jaden Daniels to choose from. Meanwhile, Jaden Daniels has won the Heisman. So, like, the Patriots still have options at quarterback. And as I've been saying all year, if they draft first, second, third, fifth, 10th, 12th, they're going to have a chance at a top-line quarterback. Whether that's May, Williams, Daniels, yours, Penix, it remains to be seen. But they're going to have an opportunity at one of those guys. So I don't mind spoiling the Steelers' chances at the postseason with a win, because they might look back and say, damn, we should have beaten the Patriots. The Patriots suck. And we lost to them by 3 points at home on a Thursday. Right. For a Patriots team that hadn't scored, I think, what, more than 14 in like five straight games or whatever it is. They scored 21 in the first half, and that was the difference in the game. I think the Steelers would be kicking themselves. I think it's okay if you're a Patriots fan to feel good about that, considering I don't think the Patriots have allowed more than 20 points in that same time span, which is, again, and today I was out at lunch and I saw Joe Flacco throwing the ball around the yard like it was 2012. And I thought to myself, was he unemployed at the beginning of the year? Because if he was, I'm not sure why Bill Belichick didn't go out and get a veteran quarterback, knowing that Mac was on a short leash, apparently, knowing that Zappi wasn't great, because don't pretend that he was, because he got cut multiple times, or at least once. Demoted to the practice squad at least once too. Malik Cunningham is up and down like a yo-yo. And I don't even know, Hoyer must play for the Raiders. So, I mean, the quarterback room was in shambles. I'm not sure why Joe Flacco or Nick Foles couldn't have been with this team, because if Mac really was on a short leash and he sucked at the beginning of the year, like a lot of people thought, I thought the turning point happened around week five or six. A lot of people were ready to crucify him after week two. But nevertheless, if you thought that, then why wasn't Joe Flacco here? Because Joe Flacco's capable. I mean, I know it didn't really work out for him in Denver or in New York, but Joe Flacco is capable, and this defense was playing really well, and they had winnable games on the schedule. I'm not going to pull it out again, I promise. The Patriots could easily be in a position that the Browns were in. The Browns lost to Deshaun Watson for the year. And they're 8-5 now. They're going to compete for a playoff spot, if not the AFC North. Because due to the Patriots beating the Steelers and the Ravens, I think are 9-3, and I think they won today too. There might be 10-3 now. It might be hard for Cleveland to win that division, but My point is why couldn't the Patriots have done something like that? Like, Zappi fever aside, you know, clearly they were able to beat Pittsburgh with Zappi. They were hanging in there against LA. They were hanging in there against the Giants, hanging in there against the Commanders, hanging in there against the Colts. All these wins, that's like six games they could have won. So I just don't get why. Sorry about that. I know this podcast production quality has been lackluster today. This is why you put your computer on Do Not Disturb. But I don't understand why the Patriots couldn't have done something like that. Like, it really wouldn't have costed them that much. And they could have competed and probably ended up with at least three or four more wins, even if they don't win all those games. Let's say they win three of them. Instead of being 3-10, they're 6-7. All right, that's an improvement. Let's say you throw one more in there. You're now 7-6. That puts you at least in the hunt, especially all these one possession games. So it's just bizarre to me that an effort wasn't made. And to me, that's on coaching or ownership or both, that they had a good defense and they knew they had a quarterback problem even before I was ready to admit they had a quarterback problem, and nothing was fixed. So I think that's inexcusable concerning how bad the AFC is. Like, Buffalo right now is beating Kansas City. Kansas City might be 8-5. So you're telling me if the Patriots had had a competent quarterback for any of these games, they might have three or four more wins. Suddenly they're like a couple of games behind the Chiefs. You know what I mean? Like, I was seeing this as early. That's why I didn't want to tank the season. It's because I thought they could get a competent backup in here, understanding that Mac just isn't it this year. Then something could have changed. But either they wanted to hang Mac out to dry because they wanted to get back at him for something he did last year, whether they wanted to tank to get a better draft pick, all while telling us it was in the best interest of the football team. Whatever the truth was, it's not an excuse for what happened this year. So that's all I got to point out. I'm happy they won. I'm happy they beat the Steelers. And I'm happy that they might have a chance to spoil either the Bills or the Jets or the Steelers, wherever they end up beating, even the Chiefs next week. Who knows? With any of these wins. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. Before I go, just want to encourage you to check out our merch store. The link is in the bio. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter to see that. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see them wearing the nice Sportland USA logo tee and my new Titletown USA Boston hat. So I encourage you to listen wherever you get your podcasts, but also to go out and purchase some of our merch. Do both. The podcast is free. The merch isn't, obviously. But hey, I'd appreciate it. And I think that we could all have some good Christmas gifts as a result. Even if they're not Christmas gifts, they're great for birthdays, graduations, all kinds of stuff. A lot of great pop culture things. I have a Brady Gronk 24 Make New England Great Again shirt up. All kinds of other neat stuff. So if you're interested in that, you can hit that up in our bio. You can also, as I said, follow us on socials at HomeFieldPod on Instagram and Twitter. And then, as I said, also you can like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you, and I appreciate you as we head into the new year for all that you've done for me as my listeners this year. I can't do it without you. And that's why I hope you tune in next week. We'll have plenty more else to talk about on Wednesday. But until then, my name is Will Highland, and you've been listening to Home Field Advantage. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. Be sure to also check us out 2 times a week on those platforms, on Monday and on Thursday. All of the Sportland USA programs are independent, and the opinions expressed in them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.